This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Welcome to our podcast, The Screwtape Letters, Confronting Evil in Our Time. I'm Ian Faith.
And I'm Galen Belinsky. In each episode, we will unpack one of C.S. Lewis's 31 letters and illuminate the nefarious schemes that the devil and his minions play in our world today.
Understanding how the demonic forces seek to separate us from God helps us to expose them,
reject them, and pursue Jesus as the center of our lives.
Subscribe and join us and our guests on this journey, The Screwtape Letters.
My dear Wormwood, it is a little bit disappointing to expect a detailed report on your work and to receive instead such a vague rhapsody as your last letter. You say you are delirious with joy because the European humans have started another of their wars. I see very well what has happened to you. You are not delirious, you are only drunk. Reading between the lines in your very unbalanced accounts of the patient's sleepless night, I can reconstruct your state of mind fairly accurately. For the first time in your career, you have tasted that wine which is the reward of all our labors, the anguish and bewilderment of a human soul, and it has gone to your head. I can hardly blame you. I do not expect old heads on young shoulders. Did the patient respond to some of your terror pictures of the future? Did you work in some good, self-pitying glances at the happy past? Some fine thrills in the pit of his stomach, were there? You played your violin prettily, did you? Well, it's all very natural, but do remember, Wormwood, that duty comes before pleasure. If any present self-indulgence on your part leads to the ultimate loss of the prey, you will be left eternally thirsting for that draught of which you are now so much enjoying your first sip. If, on the other hand, by steady and cool-headed application here and now, you can finally secure his soul, then he will be yours forever. A brimful living chalice of despair and horror and astonishment which you can raise to your lips as often as you please. So, do not allow any temporary excitement to distract you from the real business of undermining faith and preventing the formation of virtues. Give me without fail in your next letter a full account of the patient's reactions to the war, so that we can consider whether you are likely to do more good by making him an extreme patriot or an ardent pacifist. There are all sorts of possibilities. In the meantime, I must warn you not to hope too much from a war. Of course a war is entertaining. The immediate fear and suffering of the humans is a legitimate and pleasing refreshment for our myriads of toiling workers. But what permanent good does it do us? Unless we make use of it for bringing souls to our Father below. When I see the temporal suffering of humans who finally escape us, I feel as if I had been allowed to taste the first course of a rich banquet and then denied the rest. It is worse than not to have tasted it at all. The enemy, true to his barbarous methods of warfare, allows us to see the short misery of his favourites only to tantalise and torment us, to mock the incessant hunger which, during this present phase of the great conflict, his blockade is admittedly imposing. Let us therefore think rather how to use than how to enjoy this European war, for it has certain tendencies inherent in it, which are in themselves by no means in our favour. We may hope for a good deal of cruelty and unchastity, but if we are not careful, we shall see thousands turning in this tribulation to the enemy, Well, tens of thousands who do not go so far as that will nevertheless have their attention diverted from themselves to values and causes which they believe to be higher than the self. I know that the enemy disapproves many of these causes, but that is where he is so unfair. He often makes prizes of humans who have given their lives for causes he thinks bad on the monstrously sophistical ground that the humans thought them good and were following the best they knew. Consider, too, what undesirable deaths occur in wartime. Men are killed in places where they knew they might be killed, and to which they go, if they are at all of the enemy's party, prepared. How much better for us if all humans died in costly nursing homes amid doctors who lie, nurses who lie, friends who lie, as we have trained them, promising life to the dying, encouraging the belief that sickness excuses every indulgence, and even, if our workers know their job, withholding all suggestion of a priest, lest it should betray to the sick man his true condition. And how disastrous for us is the continual remembrance of death which war enforces. One of our best weapons, contented worldliness, is rendered useless. In wartime, not even a human can believe he is going to live forever. I know that Scabtree and others have seen in wars a great opportunity for attacks on faith, but I think that view was exaggerated. The enemy's human partisans have all been plainly told by him that suffering is an essential part of what he calls redemption, so that a faith which is destroyed by a war or a pestilence cannot really have been worth the trouble of destroying. I'm speaking now of diffused suffering over a long period, such as the war will produce. Of course, at the precise moment of terror, bereavement, or physical pain, you may catch your man when his reason is temporarily suspended. But even then, if he applies to enemy headquarters, I have found that the post is nearly always defended. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
Welcome to the Screwtape Letters, Letter 5. In this episode, or in this letter, they talk heavily about wars breaking out in Europe. And obviously, C.S. Lewis wrote this at a time when England had declared war in Germany, against Germany and the Axis powers. And this was a pivotal moment. And it probably had him, I think it probably had him pausing for a moment and trying to understand what are the ramifications for the future, what's the future all about. But also, how does God play into all of this?
Yeah. Yeah, how do we handle human suffering, current events, human affairs, you know, geopolitical conflicts? How does God interact with his people through these things? Because it's nothing new.
Right.
You know, God's people have been in war. You read the Bible. Plenty of wars.
Plenty of wars. And I think there's also the idea from the junior demon that this is a moment where the junior demon's all excited. Because I think in his head, he believes that this is going to mean the devil and the evil side are going to capture all these people because it's a war. It's going to be all this pain and suffering.
So Wormwood is all excited. Hey, war broke out in Europe. There's a lot of human suffering. And he's just giddy. He's drinking from the cup of joy or something.
Yeah, he talks about being drunk.
Right. Like, he says, you're high. It's like a rookie player that made it to the World Series or something this first year. You know, it's like, calm down. You know, he made it to the big leagues. You know, he's seeing the real action. This is amazing. And Screwtape kind of sets the tone and says, well, let's be careful here. I know it's a good thing, and we love to see this human suffering. You know, nothing, you know, it's the reward of all of our labor is the anguish and bewilderment of the human soul. We love to see the suffering, which just highlights the fact that the enemy wants nothing more than to steal, kill, and destroy the children of God. But the whole point of the chapter is, well, easy there, Wormwood. Just because there's a war and a lot of human suffering doesn't mean the enemy, God, isn't going to have victories. Be careful.
It could, and you pointed out earlier that 9/11 was one of those moments when, if we looked at it within the Screwtape Letters idea, that this would 9/11 would have been a great time for the devil with all the anger, the hatred, and the destruction and the loss of lives and the war that broke out after that. But yet, as we noted, the churches were packed.
right,
around 9/11.
Yeah. And I think it's important to realize we live in a world where we're very protected and we're very isolated from real struggle,
yep,
especially in America, especially in the world today. Again, especially the next generation. This is not a podcast to pick on the next generation,
nope,
or anything like that, but like kids that are in high school, their biggest, you know, their biggest difficulty and struggle, their biggest existential crisis is like somebody not liking their social media post or something like that. You know, I don't think we've ever had a generation that's had such little struggle as we've had more opportunity than any other civilization. And wartime or tragedy, you know, you think 9/11, you know, people that enjoyed the luxuries of living in New York City suddenly seeing people jump out of a high-rise, yeah, building and the carnage that you can't even explain. It brings us to the reality that we are human. And when we have that reality thrown in our faces, it forces us to think about eternal things. And it's an opportunity for us to really seek God and go to God and really contemplate the important things of life when all of a sudden they might be taken from us.
You mentioned earlier there's a lot of talk of war in the Bible. Evil exists. It's always existed.
Sure.
It doesn't stop itself. People have to step up to stop evil.
Mm.
And that's a hard thing for people to... The cognitive dissonance it has in, especially a lot of Christians' brains, with the idea that you should be turn the other cheek, and the idea of what we put on battle dress and we go to war to kill. Is that a Christian thing?
Mm.
But the only way you stop evil in this world is to do that. Like, I remember seeing a meme where a man's praying and he's saying, God, I want you to help me do this, this, and that. And there's a hole in the ground, there's a start of a hole and a shovel next to it. And the other part of the caption said something along the lines of, well, God's not going to pick up the shovel.
Mm.
He's going to help you get there, but you got to do the work. And in
right,
the same way as evil exists, God will point out where evil exists, but it's up for Christians to do the work. And there's that saying, you know, there's no greater love than for a man to lay his life down for his friends,
right?
And that's what comes in a just war. When you look back on the Second World War, there's no doubt that England and the Allies were on the side of good versus, you know, Germany and the Axis powers that were on the side of evil.
Mm-hmm. That at the end of the day, there is good and there's evil in the world.
Empirically,
it exists. And it's actually interesting you say that. Screwtape gives some advice. You know, he basically says, like, you know, don't be deceived to thinking that the war is just all good. You know, that people are going to be drawn to God. But he says, try to draw them into one of two traps. He says, give me without fail in your next letter a full account of the patient's reactions to the war so that we can consider whether you are likely to do more good by making him an extreme patriot,
right,
super zealous, rah, 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 fight for the good cause, or an ardent pacifist. So in other words, the demonic actually says, use the war to try to get him to get too much on board fighting it or too much against it. And I think what it means by that, in ultimately, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Like, Jesus is going to come back, and I'm for a theocracy. Like, let's have Jesus come back and rule. But as Christians, I think I see a lot of erring on one side of, like, getting caught up in the causes too much and forgetting the fact that, like, we serve a kingdom not of this world, and we're bringing in a kingdom not of this world. And people getting too engaged, what he would call patriotism. And on the other side, people that really embrace the fact that it's like, well, Jesus has a heavenly kingdom. I'm going to heaven when I die. Like, Jesus is going to have to sort it out. And then they completely disengage.
Yes.
And to the point where they're not even willing to be salt and light for Jesus, and they end up giving ground to the enemy. Satan uses difficult times, whether it's a world war or... Right now in the world, it feels like we might be leading to a world war, to get the church to err on one side or the other. Too involved and almost worship human government, or completely withdraw, no longer salt and light to the nations.
And it does say, you may remember where it is, I can't come up with it, where it says basically submit to authority within the Bible.
Yeah, Romans 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually talking to the fact that yes, eventually you'll end up in the spiritual realm, but while you're here on earth where God placed you, Mm-hmm. You have to submit to the authority that you're around and actually engage with that. And if that means that you're in a position where you have to fight on the good side of things, then you have to engage in there. If you have to find a way to battle against evil in your midst, it isn't just a battle that's on your knees. I think it comes down to it. We need a police force,
right? It's a battle that has to show up in the voting booth,
or yep.
voting in school board members. I mean, I don't think Christians should be giving up ground on things like, you know, township supervisors and seats in Congress, state seats and you know, national seats, state senators.
See, I've always looked at the this is relatable to what is talked about in Letter 5, but if you think of the Johnson Amendment that actually disallowed people in a pulpit in a non-profit situation to be talking about politics, was an amazingly great move on the side of evil.
It really was. Yeah.
Because it made a lot of evangelicals and a lot of Christians not question how their faith determined public life and public policy.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually almost neutered them, where they said, yep, I'll just leave
now
it
they're
to
powerless
to sort that
and
out.
Voiceless. And here's the world systems, here's the government and society and culture over here, and let's put the church and Jesus in a box all the way over
Correct.
Here. And it really is a distortion, the separation of church and state in America anyway. The idea was to keep the government out of the church.
Not the other way.
And then we gave up the ground to say, and it's like this extreme Christian libertarianism, well, let's make sure the church doesn't impact anything. It's like, no, I want go run for office. I want the church impacting everything.
Right.
I want God's people getting in the game, not just sitting out on the sidelines and pray, oh, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, in some ethereal sense. Like, get real.
Yeah,
literally.
Absolutely.
There's real battles to be won out there. Stand up. It takes men to stand up and take it back.
So C.S. Lewis is talking about that in this letter, that you've got this critical moment. You've got the undermining of faith within the whole, within the war, within people's belief. All of a sudden, the fixation becomes on country and not just on God. Mm. And he talks about the preventing formations of virtue.
Mm.
And interesting, because I think virtue is, other than being virtue signaling...
You see a lot more virtue signaling in the world than true virtue, yeah.
Talking about virtue is virtually absent.
Wow, that's pretty true.
Today,
yeah.
You know? And maybe let's dig into that a little bit, which is... I don't remember ever in my schooling, in my work life, or even actually much in my Christian life, where the idea of someone talking about, Ian, what are your virtues, or, you know, what virtues are you looking to attain?
Yeah, I think being able to define what is good is very important, because we live in a world today where the enemy, the demonic, is trying to distort that concept of good,
yeah.
to call good evil and call evil good. So I think it's a really good point. We need people that are willing to stand up and define what is good, because we live in a world that's walking further and further from it. I mean, and I think of like some of the most heinous stuff out there. People arguing for kids to take puberty blockers for for transgenderism, like. We have people arguing that, thinking they're doing a good.
Or even abortion up to...
Or abortion. Like, that's
or even
not,
beyond birth, as we've seen.
Right. I mean, insane. The you know, governor of Virginia a couple of years ago. But it's almost like fighting for abortion isn't just like, well, it's my choice, I want to do it. It's like, it's to them, it's a virtue.
Yes.
It's like, it's good. And then we live in a world where literally somehow this evil thing, and it's not just like some fringe people that believe it, but it's become a mainstream idea that this is actual goodness.
But the virtue's been framed within women's health, right?
And in that case, for sure,
health.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
how they're framing the good side of it, that it's, oh, I'm a fighter for women's health. And yet, they're not talking the whole story, which is the pain and suffering, especially within the abortion issue.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I think there's always some element of good that's exploited and twisted.
Yeah.
And when you keep twisting, all of a sudden you've twisted it 180 degrees and now something is that's good is now evil.
Right.
Or something that's evil is now considered good.
He also talks in here about the evil doing a job of diverting their attention from themselves, or that the war will divert attention from themselves. And there's a running theme through these Screwtape Letters that the demon wants you to focus on you.
Mm.
And I think it's really interesting and important, because the whole idea that a person thinks they're God is a terrible place to be.
Mm.
Because if you're God, then you're all powerful and all being. And I think this idea that they keep pushing through here of keep them focused on themselves,
mm-hmm.
how important they are, on how good they are in their own head.
We saw this in the even in the last chapter with the concept of prayer. It's just really keep your own idea of God, and don't, you know, God forbid you actually start to see him how he is. Keep the obsession of self and the pursuit of self as very high. And when you do that, you miss out on a lot of opportunities to really do good in the world.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think you pointed out the overarching theme within this letter is that suffering is part of redemption. And, you know, we saw our Lord suffer on the cross, and we've seen the saints suffer over the generations. And it is interesting, because people will say who have been through extreme suffering and come out the other side that it's actually brought them closer to God.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of non-Christians, that's a really tough concept. They're mm-hmm. like, yeah, no part of that, please.
Seriously, though.
You know?
I mean, it's an unfortunate reality that's just part of the curse. It's part of the fall of man that, like, death is a result of sin.
Yeah.
And we live in a sin-cursed world. So there's death. Even before we die physically, you just see the results of the death in culture. We talked about abortion. We see war on television. We suffer loss. We suffer tragedy. And God experienced this. I mean, you look at Jesus on the cross. God sacrificed his son. You know, there was a separation between the Son of God and the Father. The storm clouds came. It was a dark day, and Jesus cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me?
Yeah.
And he literally died on the cross. But we know that God rises again. We just celebrated Easter recently, and we know that there's ultimately new life that comes from that, and God redeems these things. So when the Christian encounters difficulty and struggle, it can be something that drives him closer to God to bring him through it and find meaning in it. And actually, he even says in the chapter, he highlights the point that if it's almost like he's saying, Wormwood, you think you're going to use the war to pull people away from faith. If something like some struggle and trial is pulling away people from a faith, was it really even real faith to begin with?
Right.
He actually says that at the end of the chapter. He says, the enemy's human partisans have been plainly told by him that suffering is an essential part of what he calls redemption. Suffering is part of redemption.
Yeah.
We're redeemed by Jesus who suffered for us. So that a faith which is destroyed by a war or pestilence cannot really have been worth the trouble of destroying. So if it was a faith that a war could knock out, was it really even a faith to begin with?
And he also points out in there that, and it's an interesting corollary with the Bible, that a just war is not murdering, but is killing. And that alone doesn't bring those people who do the killing into the devil's arms.
No. No.
So I think that's really interesting that he points that out within there. And I think the same could be said for, you know, when you look at a self-defense situation. If someone was attacking your family and you killed them, you're not going to hell.
Yeah.
Evil will not stop itself, and good Christians need to be ready to step up and stop evil.
Yeah. Well, and I think so that's actually a really good point. He says in the middle of the chapter, he says, I know that the enemy disapproves of these causes. He says the war is causing people to stand for this or that.
Right.
And sacrifice their life or take another life in order to stand for this cause and that cause. And I think the enemy, even Satan can really see. And I know it's confusing. Sometimes the enemy refers to God.
Yeah.
If I'm quoting Screwtape, the enemy refers to our enemy, which is the devil. I think Satan can see the whole flawed human world in which we live. And in an instance of a war, I think there's no perfect side. I think there's good and there's evil. But even good side is not perfect in the way they carry things out and in every cause that they stand for. And even in a war that is on the good side, you're still not having a perfect culture win out. And he points that out. He says, I know the enemy, now I'm quoting Screwtape, so that's God, disapproves of many of these causes. But that is where he is so unfair. He often makes prizes of humans who have given their lives for causes he thinks bad, and the monstrously sophisticated ground that the humans thought them good and were following as best as they knew. In other words, even if everyone's not perfect in fighting the war, God still honors people that try to stand up for good,
right,
and expects people to get in the game. And on a national level, I know wars are complicated, wars are ugly, but there are good virtues that people are standing up for. You know,
for sure.
You talked about virtue. People are willing to stand up for something that's good and fight evil, and God is going to see good things happen in the world, and it makes the demonic shudder to know that there's a whole nations of people that are willing to stand up and fight evil, even though not both sides are, there's evil on both sides,
yeah,
for sure.
Sometimes, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you think back to the Iran-Iraq war, it was, it'd be a coin flip.
Right.
Side, right?
And right.
Because they both had pretty crazy...
And that's why it's really good to not fall into the mindset of just the patriot or just the pacifist. I'm just for it. I'm just
right.
against it. I think as Christians, we need to be walking in wisdom and discernment constantly.
See, I think that should be one of the takeaways here, which is that wisdom and discernment, and living more closer to the middle. It's rather than running to extremes like we do in our politics at the moment, it's finding that middle ground, making God at the center of it as well.
Yeah, my pastor always says, don't, you know, when we're navigating these things, don't look left, don't look right, look up.
Yes. And that's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's what we have to do. So as takeaways for the audience on this, I think you have to look at the cultural issues that are at hand, look at where God fits in, and look at where your faith fits into these issues.
In terms of everything, all the cultural issues
yeah.
of the day. Yeah.
Be careful of what you're signing your name against, because it has ramifications for society, and I think all of our actions have ramifications for our soul.
Yeah, you mentioned even people out meeting at the grocery store in public places looking for petitions to be signed, that what you're actually signing, it's tough to really know because it's pretty deceptively
yeah.
put out.
I think every time I voted lately, and Arizona put in a law which said you cannot confuse with a proposition, because the propositions will be written in like three triple negatives.
Right, right. Like, you got to like cancel out
yes
the negatives
no
in your mind.
Yes, or a yes and no vote for a no. I don't know anymore. So yeah, so they're things to really look out for, and
yeah,
keep yourself focused on God. And if you are also in a place where you're suffering, like pray, because I think the whole idea of that suffering brings or is part of redemption and brings you closer to God. You know, I've experienced it in my life, and I think there's a lot of people out there I know who have said after they've came through severe suffering, have said they feel actually closer to God through that. And that's, again, a really hard concept for non-Christians or Christian-like people to understand.
Right. But, I mean, at the end of the day, we have a God who can empathize with us. Jesus took on flesh. He lived in an imperfect world. He lived in an imperfect government system. That ultimately killed
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
And he suffered quite a bit. But find meaning in the suffering.
Yeah.
And I think the demonic, while they might enjoy our torment, because they're here to steal, kill, and destroy, they also are fearful that it becomes an opportunity to really look at the weighty things of life, to look at what's important, and try to seek God in all things.
Absolutely.
And that is letter 5, Screwtape Letters.